We're going to begin today with our welcome from Peter.
Good morning. My name is Pete Kelly, and I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of this congregation. We welcome all, regardless of age, race, ethnicity, sexual orientation, religious background, or political affiliation, factors that can separate us in the larger culture. Visitors, if this is your first time visiting with us, please join us after the service for refreshments. That's coffee and conversation. Please feel free to take any brochures on Unitarian Universalism that are on the wall near the outside door. We have a guest book that's also near the back door. Please sign the guest book on your way at some time during the service on your way out. People with name tags with blue dots like the one that I'm wearing are members of the congregation and will be glad to chat with you about our experiences and about the fellowship. Because the services may differ from week to week, we encourage you to come back a few more times to get a flavor of these services and of our community, especially during the next few months when we'll be having a variety of lay leaders and guest ministers in our pulpit while we explore options for our ministry. Now's the time to turn off cell phones. Please set them to stun. Parents of small children are reminded courteously that we have childcare and religious education classes. If you choose to keep your kids with you in the worship room, please respect our need for this to be a time of quiet and peaceful reflection. Again, we welcome everyone and we look forward to getting to know you better after the service. Now, normally we dismiss the younger children a little later in the service, but we're going to do it right away this morning. So grades 1 through 6, we're going to dismiss you, children, because you have a longer-term project this morning. And then I'm going to introduce Anne Jaffe, who has an announcement to make right now. Right now.
Good morning, everybody. It's nice to see you all here. I was asked to do a testimonial as to why I value so highly our fellowship here and am going to contribute the most that I possibly can to it and to encourage all of you, too. I just a little reason why I'm here is, started when I was a kid in Catholic school, they used to say, you know, if the shoe fits, wear it. And by the way, these are the shoes we're all wearing. And if it doesn't fit, then Father O'Brien will hear your confession on Saturday. And so I decided I had to take a walk from that as I got to be an adult. And then the man I fell in love with and married said, well, the one thing I really need to do is raise my children in the Jewish faith. And that sounded great to me because in college I'd taken some classes and had, you know, night-long discussions with some Jewish friends. And in Judaism, you could question things. So that sounded like a really what I really wanted to do. And we joined a really wonderful little congregation that was just like this, 60 families or so, you know, and just wonderful people who I loved deeply. And we built community together and had very rich traditions and celebrated the year and the holidays and everything. But, and there was lots of questioning, and the questioning was really exciting. But there are certain areas you don't question, or at least I found that you didn't question. And most of those questions had to do with identity, like, why am I Jewish? And nobody else had to question that. But I would sit there, you know, week after week, you know, with the prayer language not quite matching up with my insides and going, why am I Jewish? You know, and you know, I looked around and everybody else was very comfortable in their shoes. They were a lot more different than in the Catholic Church, you know, different colors, and some were, tightly laced, and some were Velcro that you could, you know, put on quickly, and some were slip-ons that you put on Saturday. But nobody else was questioning why they were wearing the shoes. And so when my marriage broke up, I really had to figure out what I was going to do. And then I decided to get really smart and take a lesson from a really, you know, if you have a really good friend with a giant heart and really good instincts and a lot of wisdom, then you should listen to him. And Jane Hewitt had been telling me for years, oh, you got to check out my Unitarian Fellowship down in Mount Kisco. This is just so great. And she'd talk about the services and stuff. So I finally wandered on down. And when I walked in, and immediately I realized, oh my God, I walked myself right home finally, because everything about this fellowship just fit like shoes that were made for me. And like the other day, the last couple weeks, like a couple weeks ago, we had a service, and I think Jim might have witnessed it, but I don't want him to get nervous. where a minister was up here talking about prayer. And, you know, here we were getting pretty darn heated on the subject of prayer. And I just thought it was wonderful. And then on the internet, we were like, you know, just like Joe's got us all doing these, discussions. And it just cuts right through and burns the wires and causes you to think and causes you to feel and causes you to know why you are who you are and why you want to become who you want to become. And there's no other destination I've come to where you can still search. Even there, even while you're there, you can keep searching, and everybody's searching with you. And I just really have nothing but the deepest appreciation for the fact that the fellowship exists through the work of all these wonderful people who I've come to love and respect so much. And the only thing is, we do need money. So I'm asking you all to be as generous as you possibly can in support of our fellowship. It will make a difference. It'll make a difference to all of us. I know for some of us, it'll make a difference if we can spruce up the place a bit. And for all of us, it'll make a difference if we can have the minister or part-time minister or whatever we decide to do who really, really serves us and ministers to our needs. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Anne. Today we have with us Jim Wenzel, a lifetime peace activist grounded in his practice of engaged Buddhism. Jim started his service to the poor and his work for justice in the Pacific Northwest and a ministry to migrant workers. He's worked in a Mexican orphanage and a Mayan refugee camp. He accompanied human rights workers under death threat in Colombia with the Peace Brigade. He stood on the Mexican-Guatemalan border preventing soldiers from entering with Witness for Peace and has been committed to development and the creation of just systems in the remote villages of Nicaragua with Quest for Peace. We're thrilled to have him. We'll begin our service with our prelude.
Try. Words of Mohandas Gandhi. Religion without compassion is a fraud. Compassion is at the root, the very root of religion, and one who forsakes it forsakes God. One who forsakes the poor forsakes everything. If we do not look after the poor and the untouchables, we are sure to perish. God can be served in one way alone. To serve the poor is to serve God. What is the aim of life? It is to know the self. This realization of the self, or self-knowledge, is not possible until one has achieved unity with all living things, until one has become one with God. To accomplish such a unity implies deliberate sharing of the sufferings of others and the eradication of such suffering.
To light our chalice, we have Wyatt.
May the light of this flame illuminate our lives and the strivings of the Spirit. May it heal misunderstanding and strengthen love. Love is the doctrine of this fellowship. The quest for peace is its goal, and service is its prayer. To dwell together in peace, to seek truth in love, to serve humanity in fellowship, to the end that all souls shall grow into harmony. Thus do we covenant with one another.
After our very simple fellowship greeting, we're going to sing hymn number 134. we'll sing the older children out. If someone could lead us. It is our tradition to voice our thoughts, our fears, our hopes and concerns, the things we've brought with us today. So please come up and light a candle and share with us your joys and sorrows.
I'm Stan Ailes. I live in Mount Kisco. I used to come here years ago, and I'm back. I don't have a car. I need rides. Thank you.
I'm Jane Hewitt, and this is a candle of gratitude, I think. My father celebrated his 90th birthday last weekend, and my stepmother created a wonderful party, and I was so glad that he could hear all the appreciation from family and friends. And my daughter had her 18th birthday on Friday, so it feels like a new phase in parenting. It's not like one day to the next, but this is, I think, appreciation for milestones where we have the impetus to reflect on the past and cherish the memories and to kind of see the big picture rather than the day-to-day difficulties at times. And then for the fellowship, Kathy Gallagher isn't here, so I'll do another candle for the fellowship as we are also in a transition period. And may we remember our bests.
I want to light a candle. Mine who passed away suddenly. She had an accident. She fell in the bathtub. Oh, how do you do this? On the light.
I'm Patty Colombo. I light this candle of concern for Mike's mom, who went back into the hospital 2 weeks ago. She spent the last week in ICU on a breathing apparatus trying to help her breathe a little bit better. She's in congestive heart failure. And I believe she actually was going to be moved out of ICU yesterday back up onto one of the main floors. So I'm not sure if that's a good thing or if it's just, I think she's refusing treatment. So I'm not sure that there's anything she can do in ICU.
I'm lighting this candle for my cat, Dory, who died unexpectedly this week. He had a good 11 years, and he ate extremely well, which I suspect was one of the contributing factors in his demise.
So I light this candle, this last candle, for all of those people and thoughts that we have carried with us here today, both spoken and unspoken.
Words of the prophet Jeremiah. Thus says the Lord, go down to the house of the king of Judah and speak there this word. Act with justice and righteousness and deliver from the hand of the oppressor anyone who has been robbed. And do no wrong or violence to the alien, the orphan, the widow, or shed innocent blood in this place. For if you will indeed obey this word, then through the gates of this house shall enter kings who sit on the throne of David. And thus says the Lord to the king, did not your father eat and drink and do justice and righteousness? Then it was well with him. He judged the cause of the poor and needy. Is not this to know me? Says the Lord.
The words are in your order of service.
Yeah.
Our next reading is from the Christian tradition, from the Gospel according to Matthew. When the Christ comes and all nations are assembled before him, he will separate them one from another as a shepherd separates the sheep from the goats. He will place the sheep on his right and the goats on his left. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you are blessed. Inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. Naked, and you clothed me. Ill, and you cared for me. In prison, and you visited me." Then the righteous will answer and say, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? When did we see you ill or in prison and visit you?" And the Christ will say to them in reply, "Whatever you did for one of the least of my brothers or sisters, you did for me." Very soon, you're all going to get to know me as the person who wants all your money, and I don't have a problem with that. So we're going to pass the basket.
Be me.
This is not a fighting song.
Let it be me.
Words of Thich Nhat Hanh, Vietnamese Buddhist monk. If you're a poet, you will see clearly that there is a cloud floating in this piece of paper. Without a cloud, there can be no rain. Without rain, the trees cannot grow, and without trees, we cannot make paper. The cloud is essential for the paper to exist. If the cloud is not here, the sheet of paper cannot be here either. So we can say that the cloud and the paper inter-are. Interbeing is a word that is not in the dictionary yet, but if we combine the prefix inter and the verb to be, we have a new verb, interbe. Without a cloud, we cannot have paper. So we can say that the cloud and the sheet of paper inter-are. If we look into the sheet of paper even more deeply, we can see the sunshine in it. If the sunshine is not there, the forest cannot grow. In fact, nothing can grow. Even we cannot grow without sunshine. And so we know that the sunshine is also in this sheet of paper. The paper and the sunshine inter are. And if we continue to look, we can see the logger who cut the tree and brought it to the mill to be transformed into paper. And we see the wheat. We know that the logger cannot exist without his daily bread. And therefore, the wheat that became his bread is also in this sheet of paper. And the logger's father and mother are in it too. When we look in this way, we see that without all of these things, this sheet of paper cannot exist. Looking even more deeply, we can see that we are in it too. This is not difficult to see, because when we look at a sheet of paper, the sheet of paper is part of our perception. Your mind is in here, and mine is also. So we can say that everything is in here with this sheet of paper. You cannot point out one thing that is not here. Time, space, the earth, the rain, the minerals in the soil, the sunshine, the cloud, the river, the heat. Everything coexists with this sheet of paper. That is why I think the word interbe should be in the dictionary. To be is to interbe. You cannot just be by yourself alone. You have to interbe with every other thing. This sheet of paper is because everything is. As thin as this sheet of paper is, it contains everything in the universe in it. Deep insights that flow from intense awareness, that flow from just simply being in the moment. I asked in that spirit that we pause for a few minutes of silence, a time to breathe, to think thoughts or not to think thoughts, a time to be aware of the sounds that are here, those who are here in our midst and beyond these walls, but in any event, to become more fully aware of the life force that we all share with so many.
We'll break our silence with our next hymn, Let There Be Peace on Earth. The words are in your program.
Light, fire, is a wonderful archetypal symbol. We started our tray of lit candles with just one flame, one candle, and that fire was transferred in turn to all the rest. Each candle is distinct, spatially separated. We could move them to different corners of the room if we chose. In appearance, many, but truly, one light, one fire. Is not life the same? Is it not one? We've heard some voices of the wise. So many people, all the great traditions, have drawn the same conclusion over the years and found a multitude of ways and images to express this common oneness. The continuity of life is readily apparent when I pick up my first grandchild and pack him up for a walk in the woods. But that continuity extends far beyond to the distant and the despised. Jeremiah's God is not asking of us charity for the poor. Rather, he's demanding our doing justice. It's what we're called to do. This was a core insight from which sprang the formation of liberation theology in the 60s. For this God of Jeremiah identifies himself with the poor and the oppressed. Or as Jeremiah says, to care for the poor is to know God. Matthew's judgment scene spells out the very essence of the Christian message. When you stop to think about it, it's really mind-blowing of all the criteria, of all the standards that you could be put on the carpet for, to be held accountable for in judging your life. Not the great works, not what put your name in the headlines, not your inventions, the big buildings you've built. It's just, were you there for the little guy, the forgotten, the oppressed, the marginalized, the most vulnerable one in the family? His brother, his sister, our brother and our sister. We are one family. We share one light. We share one life. It doesn't look like it on the outside. We've got this dualistic way of thinking. But Hinduism begs us to be compassionate. Buddhism invites us to walk the path of compassion. If you ever see the Dalai Lama, it just exudes from his pores. We naturally and instinctively protect and nourish our own life. We work to feed and keep our fire burning bright. The trick is to remember that that extends beyond the apparent limits of our immediate family and our own bodies. I find the path of someone like Thich Nhat Hanh especially reassuring. You don't hear any a priori, no big leaps of faith, fancy terminology. to start where you are, the only place you can really be in the present moment, something we distract ourselves from all too often. Start with your breath, a moment of silence, a moment of sitting. It could be walking, it could be working. A moment of thought, life, a moment of breath. In one deep moment, we can dissolve our apparent separateness. We can tear down walls like these and let flood in a deluge of people from distant places. The escaped of Darfur, who have fled this terrible genocide, I wanted to light a candle for them. The environmental and human rights activists who daily bear the constant stress of death threats, like the people that I accompanied in Colombia, prisoners of conscience across the world, victims of torture across the world, the 20,000 Africans who will die today for want of medications for curable and treatable illnesses. They can all flood in. I personally have always felt responsible for what I know, and my travels have put some burdens on me over the years. And my experience or response has simply been to wait attentively, patiently, for some kind of a call rather than seeking out a way of responding. A call, a vocatio, a vocation. That's all the word means. And a call has always come at some point, presenting some way to respond to people in need. Repeatedly in my own life, it's been focused on serving Latin Americans. Sometimes this call is absolutely crystal clear. It's just like a bolt. 1983, driving down the Taconic to work, where I was a teacher at Pocanico, and a quick clip, a bunch of interdenominational church North Americans were assembling at the Nicaraguan border, Witness for Peace, they call their group, so that with the presence of their body, they would dissuade continual attacks by the Contras, killing the community leaders and the catechists and the teachers in peasant communities there. I knew instantly that was a group that I was a part of, as I heard it. And it was with Witness for Peace that I first went to Nicaragua. I came back haunted. I never forgot an interview with a doctor, a Nicaraguan doctor that I interviewed at the major hospital in Managua, telling how he had lost so many of his asthmatic patients simply because they didn't have an inhaler, a bronchodilator to provide. And not that he'd given up. He was working with acupuncture and herbal remedies in their absence. And I returned home and saw my son in a little bit different light, taking him to a specialist for his asthma and buying him the bronchodilators. It was perfectly appropriate that he have. But it reminded me again, as I had been often before and many times since, that his life was no more precious than those kids in Nicaragua who are dying for want of the resources that he had. And again, it reminded me that of the danger of this mindset that keeps rising up, that somehow an American's life is worth infinitely more than the life of anyone else living on this planet. Sometimes the call is not as clear. It's just a door that I step through, not knowing where it will lead, and I begin walking the path I find. Today is a fruit of my Aunt Jaffe door. Things unfold gradually, step by step, and it was that way with Quest for Peace. It started with my neighbor putting a bunch of industrial sewing machines on the curb for the trash, and I saw them in an instant. I said, these belong in Nicaragua. And through a series of convoluted inquiries, I was brought to Connecticut Quest for Peace. And we sent those machines. And over time, I've increased my activity to the point of being a full-time volunteer. My focus is to find material aid that we send down there. Our mission is to keep the poor, is to help the poor in Nicaragua develop ways for them to better their own lives. We work with schools, orphanages, communities. A few are inner city, most are rural. And implicit in our work is the idea that peace does not come without justice. The heart and soul of our efforts is the 20 years life work of a Basque woman. Her name is Ketsu Amasua. She's head of a John the 23rd Institute Social Development Agency at the Central American University. Part of her work is to involve the students there. Highly organized person, big heart. She's our eyes and ears. And over the years, she's built this web of contacts with highly committed community leaders, some religious, many not, of great integrity that we work through. Nicaragua has taught me many things. Parenthetically, know your history, which they do intensely. And as well, it taught me that the answer to people's needs is not relief. It's not handouts. It's not giving a guy a fish so he can eat for a day. It's working for structural change, developmental aid, providing long-term, sustainable, empowering projects that allow the people themselves to resolve their needs in ways that they can continue. I think it was that emphasis on developmental aid that beckoned to me in the Quest's efforts. Ketsu has evolved to a five-year model of development. She now does a survey and identifies villages or little tiny hamlets where she feels that within 5 years of intense developmental effort, she can lift a community in extreme misery with maybe an average of second grade reading level to a level of being poor but managing with a sixth grade reading level community-wide. She's now working with 15 of these communities. They were selected in part because no other organization outside of them was involved in any way, and that there was a major interest in participating in such a project. So she's a year and a half ago started with 15 communities. She's just recently added another five, something like 17,000 inhabitants. Everything that happens there is about building community and confidence. And so she starts by just setting up small interest groups based on their interest and expertise, a group to focus on health and define simple projects that can be begun. Clean the plaza. How about some latrines? A group on education. A group of youth. Somebody to think about recreation. We're going to need some baseball teams down the line, and we're going to need some baseballs for those teams. Housing, water. Ketsu has a gift for accomplishing two and three things at once. Resources are so few, you have to get a maximum input. We send containers of material aid down. They go straight into our warehouse, and from there straight into the storage sheds of the communities. Nothing is lost. We send, for instance, sewing machines, lots of sewing machines and thread and needles and all that kind of stuff. Those aren't given to individual women to put in a corner of their homes. They're put in a central area that will draw many women together. They'll be taught employable skills, forming cooperative, again, building community. And what they're doing now is they're buying a ticket to Nicaragua's free education. 20% of Nicaraguan kids never enter a school because you have to have a book bag, you have to have pencils, paper, you have to have a uniform. And that's like a half a year salary for a peasant. So they're making uniforms and selling them at half the market rate, just within reach of the pocketbooks of their poor neighbors. They made astonishing progress. I was down in August, and I was just stunned as a teacher to see these uneducated people standing up, young people too, just with great articulateness and confidence explaining what they'd been doing in this project. And I saw representatives of these circles of interest being formed into a formal board and making a commitment, a lifetime commitment of service to their communities, like watching a bunch of nuns professing themselves. Very, very impressive. They've got me chasing around looking for Mixmaster, KitchenAid mixers, because every one of these communities has got AKED programs, including pastry making. Well, I never talk without some sense of concrete responses that might be available, because I think it's very depressing to hear bad news and have to walk away and say, well, there's nothing I can do about it. I've left a little wish list of some of the things that we're always on the hunt for. I look forward. I'm certainly disposed to talk with your Social Action Committee at some future time, perhaps to explore a way that that you might fit us under the umbrella of projects that you support on an ongoing way. And lastly, in that vein, I wanted to just touch on the broader issue of developmental aid, which is in the news, and urge you to inform yourself, put it on your radar screen, and if you get a chance, if you're having coffee with Hillary sometime, lobby on its behalf. Sadly, the pattern is, over and over and over again, the U.S. Offers or promises very, very little in the way of foreign aid, often does not meet those promises down the road, and almost all of it goes to relief aid and very little to developmental aid. There is something very, very hopeful that's surfaced. In 2002, the UN set up what is being called the Millennium Project with a goal of cutting world poverty in half by 2015. President Bush signed a declaration along with all the industrial nations' leaders promising to move our country as their countries to a target of dedicating 0.7% of our national income to foreign developmental aid. The U.S. right now is giving less than 0.2%, 20 cents for $100 worth of gross domestic product. Actually, five European countries have actually reached this target level of 0.7%. Five others have set a specific timeline for achieving it. The U.S. has not done either yet. Jeffrey Sachs of Columbia University was appointed by Kofi Annan to head this project, and about a month ago he was talking about the silent tsunamis of global poverty, and he made a reference to the fact that 150,000 kids in the world every month lose their life to malaria, which was at that time about the death count of the tsunami, which actually went a little higher. They've just issued a detailed plan suggesting ways that this can and hopefully will be implemented, and among them is what he calls quick wins. One of them is distribute insecticide-treated bed nets to prevent in heavily infested malaria areas, so that you don't have women like a Cambodian woman with six kids and one mosquito net having to make the Sophie's choice of which of her kids gets the protection. And I'm thinking, if you send a container of mosquito nets to some poor country and make it available to local clinics to distribute, it's not going to end up in a Swiss bank account. Another of his quick fixes is school meal programs, which is something that we've been doing for some years with our with several of our schools in Nicaragua. It improves nutrition and health of the kids, so their learning is better, and more importantly, it gets them to the class because it's an incentive. Instead of sending them out to sell chiclets, so they have money to buy food for the family, they're getting the food in school. It's a wonderful, concrete expression on a macro level of the oneness of the human family. It deserves the support of our government, and it deserves our efforts to ensure that that kind of support is forthcoming. Thank you.
We have time now for a reflection. This way.
Hi, I'm Linda McNeil, and for your information, I am head of social outreach for the church. And this is a point of contention. I think everything you talked about was noble and interesting and useful and worthwhile, and I'm no one to evaluate any projects. But so if you all do want to do something more global, bigger than what we have planned, then please contact me. I'm Linda McNeil. The other thing is, what we are concentrating on is the food pantry, and Jerry Morton needs assistance. This is one of our people. If you do not know who Jerry Morton is and you're interested, please contact me afterward, but she desperately needs home visitors. And I've been coordinating that, and we need a lot more people to visit her during the week, mostly. And we do give to, I don't know the name of it, it's a, the service committee, and we did a collection for that. But if you do want to expand our offerings, just please contact me. The other thing is I was not here during the sharing, the candles, and I'm going to use this as an opportunity just to share some very good news, and it has to do with this. It's my husband is not going to Iraq. While I was making the announcement that he was getting his dental records done, the last time I was here was just about the exact same moment that he was being picked. He got picked to go on a NATO mission instead, and he'll be going to Africa mostly. He'll be on duty for maybe about a year, but he'll be home and out and around and mostly in Staten Island when he's not out and about. So I have been, my family has been taken off the chopping block, and I know there are many other families that do have to relinquish a family member, but I'm delighted, and I'm sorry to take this opportunity, but I just couldn't wait.
Thank you, because I think what's really important, I'm Marian Halberg, I think what's really important, I feel weird because there's nobody sitting here, so I'm gonna, what's really important when we think globally is that it reminds us to act locally, which is what Linda also reminded us of. There's so much going on right here in our community in Westchester. We border Mount Kisco, and there are homeless people. Every few months, they find tents in the woods of immigrants who are sleeping there. And they know who's there because the garbage bags are filled with clothes. And sometimes there are children's clothes in those tents, in those bags. Bedford, the local Bedford paper, has written about a program that some churches in Bedford and Mount Kisco and some temples have undertaken this year to house the homeless during very, very cold weather. And those are the other kinds of initiatives that I think locally maybe our fellowship could participate in. Probably most of us are not paying attention to this, but the Beeline bus strike here in Westchester affects so many people who have low-paying jobs, who probably will either lose their jobs or lose their weekly income if they can't get to those jobs, and I'm not sure if the strike ended or not. The strike is also a union that I dare say is filled with immigrant workers themselves, and they're losing their wages in their efforts to do better at work, that most of us probably drive by those people waiting at the bus stops if you don't even know where the bus stops are, if you don't have to use them. And that's all very important. So again, thinking globally and about all the issues that are out there also reminds us that there's so much for us to do right here at home. That's right.
Hi, I'm a newcomer, and I wasn't going to share, but you just encouraged me. And just during the sermon, and all of these thoughts are very noble, I could only think of people in our country, people in our community, and so many other people that I wanted to become part of the fellowship so that I could contribute. And those are my thoughts this morning.
Thank you so much also for bringing the views from the philosophies and religions all over the world of how we are one people, and that, you know, the butterfly that flaps its wings somewhere else has a great effect here. And I think if so many of the people, it's interesting to look at how the poverty in other parts of the world affects us right here at home, but thinking that some of these really wonderful concrete steps you're talking about to improve the lives of the people in their own country and in their own place might help them have the hope that they can make their lives better where they are. They don't need to come, you know, to cross borders, to risk death to come here if they have a way to make a life with their family in their own country. And I think we've sort of forgotten about Nicaragua. That was last year's issue. Thank you for bringing us some really concrete things we can do to help.
Thanks. Thank you very much for reminding us that what religion is really all about is a celebration of life. And that I was impressed by the reading you did from the Buddhist tradition about the paper. It certainly was, it made you realize the intertwining of everything. But if you carry that a little bit further, the natural world exists and provides the resources. People came into existence and provided the need for paper and invented a way to do it. And what's really important is not the paper, but what the words that are written on it, because that is what affects our lives. And that means is that basically what we're celebrating is that we're alive. We're not really celebrating God or Jesus or anything else. What religion is really all about is the story of how mankind has come to realize that being alive is the important thing, and that the only way to keep that wonderful experience going is the survival of the species. That is, that our children survive, and they have children, and they have children. And the only way to do that is to get everybody together to celebrate life. In a sense, to take care of the poor, who are the ones who most often need that that help.
This is a great discussion. What I wanted to link up here is that I met Jim Wenzel when my nursery school, which is a parent cooperative, by the way, which means that everybody's involved, right? It's a lot like our UU fellowship here. Anyway, every year we want to run a rummage sale, children's stuff, right? Because people's closets are stuffed with clothes and toys and books and all kinds of stuff for kids, right? And so there's like this need of the people who have too much to get out from under the suffocating quantities of stuff that we have. And so we run this rummage sale, right? And Jim comes by at the, you know, toward the end of the rummage sale. Actually, we invite him to come early in the rummage sale and pick out some really good stuff. But at the end of the rummage sale, he's coming by and stuff that other people here in Westchester would just pass by, no matter how cheap it is. Jim can find uses for, you know, people down in Nicaragua who, for whom that's a treasure. Anyway, but what really impressed me when I began to talk with Jim about what he's doing with all this stuff that he ships down there is the change of the concept of helping, of aid. I mean, with the tsunami, we're sending stuff over there, but you know, it's just to relieve pain, current pain, in the moment pain. But what Quest for Peace and what Marion's talking about doing here for these people in Mount Kisco, what we're all talking about today is empowering people to take care of themselves. And that's something that, you know, brings what Henderson said. It makes us all feel more alive. It makes, you know, people feel more alive, not just to receive the help, but to receive a help that enables them to help themselves. And that's what we're looking for, I think. That's what our fellowship is hungry to do, is empower ourselves and let that overflow and empower other people. And starting within our own community and radiating outward through Mount Kisco, the people from Latin America coming up here to escape dire poverty down there. We are all one. The piece of paper is the perfect metaphor. And I thank you, Jim, for coming and bringing it to us.
Thank you. I just wanted to say my own. I mean, I love the thing about the piece of paper as well, and appreciate that concept. But just sort of bring my own arrogance. And here's a surprise that people that I might be called arrogant, but and I call myself arrogant. That might actually surprise you. But it's I know intellectually that I'm one with people in the world, but I don't really think of myself as someone who could have been born impoverished in Asia. I know intellectually that could have been me. You know, as the old saying goes, you know, there but go I for the grace of God. I don't believe in the grace of God stuff, but there but go I for the probabilistic operations of the universe, you know. And I truly believe that intellectually, but emotionally I don't. You know, emotionally I have that arrogance. Psychologically, I have that arrogance that says, "Well, no, I'm me. I'm not some poor bastard in Asia or Africa." And it's like I don't really get it in my heart that I could be some poor bastard in Asia or Africa. But it's so.
Come with us on our next trip to Nicaragua. They will melt your heart. The generosity of the poorest of people is just absolutely astounding.
No, my father, who grew up very poor in Italy, I had the privilege of growing up poor in America. But he always said, if you're hungry, go to a poor man. You know, don't ask a rich man. If you're hungry, go to a poor man.
Jim, could you just tell everybody about the possibilities like that of going, you know, of making a trip? Just tell everybody, could you do that?
There is actually information. He left us some flyers and brochures and pamphlets and stuff for everyone to have. And we can contact Jim easily at any time. He's going to offer our closing words. I'm going to just extinguish the chalice, if everyone could stand. We have our chalice to extinguish our closing words and our closing song all together.
I love your image of Lake Managua in the back. Made me feel very much at home. And my wish is simply that every day you find a brief time for a bit of silence, and that you find every day some small way to further the work of the cause of justice, whether it's for the homeless here or in any other way, whatever your path is. I truly believe that there is no peace, and for that matter, probably is no end to terrorism either, without justice.
Peace and love until we meet again. the words from the order of service.